at times is becoming farcical. And you have to really feel for these players and management. This isn't normal in any shape or form.
For your first chance to hear Brian O'Driscoll on OTB, download the OTB Sports app and turn on your notifications.
The OTB Podcast Network.
So Tyrone managers Fergal Logan and Brian Duher were awarded the Airgrid Manager Moment of the Month award for September. Airgrid, the state-owned company that's delivering a cleaner energy future for Ireland, has been the official timing partner to the GAA since 2016, and this year announced a five-year extension of its partnership with the GAA as official timing sponsor. And I'm delighted to welcome Fergal Logan to the show. Fergal, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning. Great, thanks.
What's the aftermath been like of an All-Ireland victory as a co-manager? How have you got to experience it? It's obviously a little bit different this year than other years, but what's it actually been like for you?
Yeah, it's been great. You know, it was fairly chaotic for the first 48 hours, couple of days. The players seemed to enjoy it well. Obviously, everybody involved in the setup, Brian, myself. You know, you do draw some sense of satisfaction and contentment out of a victory like that. And most of all, it seemed to give everybody around Tyrone and maybe even further afield a good lift because, you know, throughout the championship, there was some exciting football, a couple of good semi-finals, good final. And listen, we're just glad and lucky that we come out the right side of it.
Who did you, in the aftermath of the victory, want to spend time with and where did you want to spend time?
Well, undoubtedly, you want to spend time in and around your own family. They're the ones, the wee ones here and Eileen and generally people that are close to you. And, you know, we all like some interaction and some plaudits being thrown at us. So for the couple of days that we had it, it was good to be out and about too and meet people. But essentially, those that live with you and those that are close to you see the endeavour and the sweat and the commitment and the pain that can sometimes follow in being involved in sport and football teams and especially managing teams. So, you know, there are ups and downs, but listen, it's been a great couple of weeks and hopefully it'll shorten the winter.
Did you watch the game back yet with the management team, just as the management team?
No, not really. Brian's residence is quite a distance from me here. I'm in East Tyrone and Brian's way up in the mountains of North Tyrone, up in the Spurns. So, you know, with the digital onset, with the public health emergency, a lot of stuff's been done over this medium. But I can't say that myself and Brian have sat down together and watched it. But, you know, I've watched it and everybody now, analysis is a major, major part of high-end sport. And everybody will watch it in their own time. And that's the beauty nowadays. You can watch it on your phone, watch it on your iPad, watch it on your computer. And you know, we will gather up in a football sense somewhere soon in our minds and get together, Brian and myself and the others that are all involved and push the thing down the tracks. So, you know, I suppose we're still the club championships up and running here and that's going to keep everybody busy for another week or two.
Because whenever we speak to a team who've been beaten in an All-Ireland final, going back and actually watching the match is an important step in improving next year. So I wonder, is that going to be an important step for you getting even better next year, is actually analysing parts of that All-Ireland final and things you could do even better?
Yeah, well, listen, the pursuit of excellence, I suppose, is what it's all about in high-end sport. And if you're absolutely clinical and ruthless about it, you would set into that game. And when I did watch it, there were certain aspects of it that I thought, well, there you go. But again, you have to balance the psychology of it even with yourself, because you could put yourself over the edge worrying too much about everything. You just got to enjoy it. So I think in the main, this side of winter at least, it's a game to be enjoyed and to sit back and watch, and maybe at Christmas, you know, we go through a few games and enjoy them and stuff. So, because in the end of the day, you've got to enjoy all that's happened, and we're just lucky to be part of it.
And are you turning up the commentary full blast when you're watching it back, knowing that you've got the job done, listening to the analysts, listening to people beforehand, writing to Ron off and saying, yes, hook this to my veins?
Yeah, well, we all have our inner thoughts about comments that are made in or about ourselves or teams that we're involved in. So, yeah, it's nice to know the result. Let's put it that way. It's nicer and more comfortable to know the result. And yes, you know, whether we like it or not, we try to shut out certain things that come in to the atmosphere at times. But, you know, you're interested, obviously, in hearing what the experts have to say. And sometimes they get it wrong.
It did seem throughout the year maybe that tap wasn't turned off fully. Like, we had Niall Morgan on the show and he was well aware of some of the analysis of him in the aftermath of the semi-final. I know Con Kilpatrick on Instagram was tagging Andy Moran and Paddy Andrews, questioning their analysis of their midfield, and I think Conor Myler said something similar as well. How important was that throughout the year, actually tapping into some of the things that have been said about the team and using that for motivation?
Yeah, there's a small bit of psychology in that. And the famous line that, you know, it's best to have a chip on the shoulder and preferably two chips on the shoulder. You know, when you go about high-end sport or business or whatever, you need a hunger. And sometimes you self-motivate that hunger out of the thoughts and comments of others. But, you know, we wouldn't want to go too deep on that side of it. And players should be generally sensible and should understand that, listen, everybody's got opinions. Sometimes we're wrong, sometimes we're right. Everybody puts them out there. People put them out there to greater or lesser degrees. Some people feel the urge to put it out there all the time and to very high degrees. So, you know, sometimes people can take an edge off that. But in the end of the day, you're self-motivated. You're within your own group. And, you know, I think essentially my advice to players would be stay within your own thoughts. Don't put yourself up for any public comment unnecessarily and just get on with the job in hand, which is just playing football.
And is there any part of you as a manager that tries to control that or tries to encourage it in a healthy way? Because, I mean, anybody who's seen A Year Till Sunday will have seen John O'Mahony with the newspaper clipping saying this is what people are writing about you. Is there anything that you as a management get involved with on that level, or do you just leave it up to the players to find that stuff for themselves?
Generally, it's a fairly joined up and communicative world. Everybody is not long. You can eat your breakfast and you can see all you need to see in 20 minutes on your phone from all angles. So now and again, you would tap into it. And, you know, sometimes there's an edge to be got. I suppose it depends on the lead into games, you know, what you need and what pitch the thing needs to be set at. So, you know, I wouldn't say we try to block players from doing anything because it's their lives, it's their comment, you know, but we expect them to present themselves properly for Tyrone. We expect them to play good football for Tyrone. And now and again, we would tap into the odd bit of stuff, but we wouldn't want to get too carried away with it. But there are some motivational levers that you can take from other people and other people's comments.
Fergal, can you take us back to the first time that yourself and Brian Dewar sat down and thought about taking an underage team together? Like, was it just from conversations that you'd had over the years that you shared a fairly common view of what football should look like, how it should be played? What was the instinct on both parts for you guys to think we could team up here?
Yeah, well, it was part coincidental in truth because you know, the Tyrone under 21 job came up and I found myself in the middle of that. Brian had been involved the year before. Myself and Brian had played together. Peter, we'd played with Peter too. And it sort of just, in one sense, we fell in together. I can't say that we sat and we talked football. We talked ambitiously that we'd want to manage Tyrone seniors. When I finished with Tyrone, or finished with Georgetown Harps, the furthest thing from my mind was that I would ever manage a football team, never mind Tyrone seniors. So, you know, and it just developed. And genuinely this year, people will say, well, did you sit down and did you and Brian plot to win an All-Ireland and did you this, that and the other? We plotted to get to the first training session. We had the lockdown situation. We plotted to get training session to training session. We mucked in. We took the games thick and fast and we just rode the waves. So, you know, I'd love to say that there was some master scheme or greater plan, but you know, Brian does things in the moment and he does them with passion and with a desire to win. Peter was it worked well at under 21 level, the three of us mucking in, so to speak. Peter's massive football brain and otherwise brain. So between the three of us, we sort of hived things up at under 21s, just moved forward into seniors. Peter, for his own reasons and the family connections and all that goes with it, Peter did the noble thing and said, listen, guys, I can't necessarily be involved in that management. It might be unfair to others in his watch who didn't have people over the top of them when they were coming up through their football careers. So listen, you know, sometimes fate, sometimes luck, sometimes design. So it's probably a mix of everything. But listen, we're just glad that the marriage worked out happily thus far.
And so obviously, you as you said, you played football with Brian. Were you mates? Like, and when you were with the under 21 and then under 20 grade, at that grade, were you having conversations and realizing actually this relationship does work?
Yeah, probably to a degree, but I'm going to be very honest with you. Brian's a particularly busy guy. I find myself particularly busy. There's not a lot of time and sort of for sitting down and saying, well, this is great. And you know, obviously you need some element of relationship and trust. And I suppose when we set out, the first night we set out, it was put to us that joint management may not work. And, you know, much like in right now, I simply said it, called it as I saw it. And I said, listen, it doesn't cause me one iota of thought to be involved in joint management. You rise or fall as a team and players together. You rise or fall as a management team together. When I say a management team now, I mean the full treatment of everybody that goes with an intercounty backroom team. And listen, you know, it's somewhat overstated. You're as good as your players, and it's always a collective for me. I can't consider any other position that is not a collective. And I'm happy, I'm glad that Brian's position with myself, because there were some people who put it to us even on the first night, listen guys, joint management doesn't work.
And obviously you've managed to prove that wrong over the period of time. It's a remarkable achievement. One other thing just on this before we move on to something else. With Joe McMahon on, and you know, you talk about people with giant football brains. We had the pleasure of having, just as he finished his career, having him on a few times and spending some time in his company. You could tell he thought about the game kind of differently. And he was saying to us afterwards that, like, he feels free in the environment to come forward with ideas and suggestions and nominations, really, about selection. But ultimately, the decision rests with you guys. Again, that's an interesting dynamic. Where have there been times over the course of the year where you thought, actually, I want this guy to play, and Brian thinks, you know, maybe not this week. How do you work through those little knots?
Yeah, well, listen, the coaching that Joe and Collie Holmes and Peter Donnelly did on the field, and Des McGuinness goalkeeping, for me, that was the crux and the core of how we won it. After Killarney, we set out and we trained hard. We coached, we coached, we coached. I'll say we coached. I'll say Joe and Collie and Pete coached very heavy. In terms of myself and Brian, you know, Brian summed it up well when I overheard him being interviewed one night when he said, you know, we don't always agree on everything, but, you know, we always reach an agreement. So listen, you know, of course, everybody has different subjective views of players, what they bring to a team, and there are a few moments when you're locked in a bit and your thoughts mightn't just align in terms of a player, his contribution, does he start, does he come on, is he in the 26, is he not in the 26, but you know, we managed to work most things out and you know, when you're bringing on good footballers into a team and when you're dealing with good footballers, you know, generally things are look a lot better than they might otherwise look, having seen it at all grades, you know.
Well, when you think about it, the hive mind is always better and more interesting than a single individual's. Like, just because you push yourself, you guys have to have your view fully thought out, and you need to have second level, second order thinking. Well, what's going to happen after that, you know? And then all of a sudden you're both reaching a deeper understanding of each other's positions, and when that works, that's unbelievably powerful.
Yeah, because you know, nobody's an island and nobody has all the answers, and in the end of the day, as you say, if you're challenged when you put forward a name or a player that you want to play, you have to have your good reasons and your reasoned decision set out, and it'll be challenged. And that goes for everybody, the three coaches, Holmesy, Joe, Peter. You know, we would take soundings from everybody. I suppose ultimately the buck stops with Brian and myself, so you know, it's a happy collective, and it worked out well this year.
That Killarney game has become something of a road to Damascus moment, it seems. It's certainly, when the book is written about Tyrone's victory this year, there's going to be a full chapter on that game in Killarney. What's your reflections now on what the team did in the build-up to that game, why that game went the way it did, and the lessons that you learned? How do you think about that match now, in isolation in some ways?
Yeah, well, listen, we were just delighted to stagger through the three-team group or four-team group of all the northern counties here, and a draw at the last dying breaths with Monaghan got us through. We were delighted to get a semi-final against a team like Kerry. In one sense, the trip was a sort of a double edge, because we thought, well, listen, it's a chance to get away with everybody and try and build the thing. And we had a very good weekend in Killarney, save for the 70 whatever minutes it was. And you know, the reality is that I would love to say we were either training that morning or we were out the night before. You know, we got off the bus and to stretch our legs, we walked around the National Park and the threw American footballs at each other and rugby balls and fisted a few balls. The next morning, maybe they saw members of the backroom team all out jogging. The gym was open for people outside of the 26, maybe. But, you know, there was no... We went at that as a very, very important game. And we came up with our tails between our legs, well chastened, and we shipped 6 goals. I genuinely don't remember shipping 6 goals standing on the sideline with Georgetown Harps. And we've had some difficult days. And it's nothing other than it seems to everybody else is that Tyrone took an absolute kicking in Killarney that day.
What did the coaching involve after that? Because you mentioned that the three lads really, really went to town coaching-wise over the following couple of months.
Well, I suppose where we were lucky was that we were late out in the Ulster Championship. So we'd had only a couple of weeks lead in to the National League because of the lockdown. So we didn't get together until just before the National League started. Then obviously the focus was on that. And probably that was the luckiest period for us because I think we had a 3 or 4 week gap. And one that meant we could do some hard physical training and run hard because we'd no immediate games in sight. And two, it gave us an uninterrupted phase of coaching. And that was, I think we played Cavan on the 10th of July in Omagh. Killarney was the 12th of June. So that for me was the month that helped set the foundations in place. And then after that, you're back in games and you're building, the team built itself physically and confidently. And as each game went by in the championship, and it just worked out from there.
What was the biggest improvement then as a result of that coaching?
Well, the biggest improvement overall, probably one, we got drilling into some heavy running and unless you've the leg work done, as we all know, you know, the mind can weaken quicker than it should. So we got that done. Then we got some work done, and I'm not going to throw it all out for everybody else, but we did look, and so much systems is somewhat overstated, but we looked at some tackling, turnovers, where to do this, where to do that, and we just had time to shape things up a bit. Maybe we were overambitious, thinking we could just take Killarney on carry on in Killarney and just toe-to-toe it. We toe-to-toe it all year, really. We didn't come away from that. But maybe we've got time just to walk it out and talk it out on the training field, and that's where the learning's done.
It seemed that Tyrone at the end of the year had provided an unbelievable template for teams in future. And template's probably the wrong word. What I mean is that what we saw early on in the game was cornerbacks coming up, scoring unbelievable points. I think the Hampsey score off the outside of the right boot was just a gorgeous score early in the first half. And what we had was a team where if you played your number 15 as your number 1 and your number 1 as your number 15, you'd probably still beat a lot of teams as well. How much of a thing was this throughout the year from your perspective, Fergal, knowing that there was this versatility around the pitch, footballers everywhere on the pitch?
Yeah, well, that's a tribute to the quality of player in Tyrone, you know, and the semi-final, the All-Ireland semi-final, the full back line were the people on the board early on. Potty scored a couple of clinking points off the outside of the right boot. So, we're back to this possession game. We're back to everybody being comfortable on the ball. And I suppose that's the key moment because, you know, I have said it for years that your full back line is your most potent attacking weapon because they come onto the system, certainly during the defensive years, they come into the play late, and during the blanket defence, which I thought would wash itself through, and hopefully it has washed itself totally through the system now, but you know, they were your most potent attackers, so everybody needs to be comfortable on a football field nowadays. Listen, the goalkeepers, as you've seen, need to be super confident and composed on the ball. So it's a long way from my day, to be honest. But we're blessed in Tyrone. We have a good standard of footballers with a good skill set. And we don't mind who kicks the points, to be honest. As long as they go over the bar, we're only measured in one item, and that's over the bar or under the bar. So listen, it doesn't matter to us. And of course, everybody would be encouraged to take their shot and get on with it because you know, nobody's that special around the outfit that every shot must go through him.
Why were you confident that the defensive systems and the blanket defence would wash themselves through? Because there was a lot of conversations about rule changes and changing the game in order to get rid of it. But obviously you were sure that it was just a phase.
Yeah, no, I've said for 6, 7, 8 years that this would wash itself through because it's just one of those things. It's a bad start to set out just to defend or to primarily defend, and I just felt that, you know, it wouldn't prevail because it just was artificial, contrived a bit, you know, but listen, that's progress in one sense. That's team development. That's systems development. You know, and we'll move through more phases before it's all out. But I was always confident that that would wash itself through the system. And I think, you know, in one sense, this year might have seen it washed through.
I think that's really interesting, the point you made about no one is special, because there's definitely counties where players are encouraged not to shoot, that you've got to find the shooter. Your job is to make sure you carry the ball and transition to the scoring zone. In the scoring zone, you give it to somebody who we know is going to have a 70 to 90% success rate. Whereas with you guys, it's like, if the shot's on, take the shot. That speaks to a great confidence in the player's ability, but also a trust and a freedom that they have.
Yeah, but it would be wrong of me to say that, you know, we're not saying, listen, shot selection's important. Shot selection's absolutely critical, because every point's a prisoner. So, you know, if you're in the right position and it's the right shot to take, it doesn't really matter who it is. Obviously, there are percentages and everybody keeps their conversion rates, and sometimes you'd prefer, you know, Darren McCurry swinging onto his left boot than another, but in the scheme of it, it doesn't work that well. You can't control all those things. So listen, everybody's got to get up and at it and get on with it. So Listen, it worked.
It's not machine learning. I did want to ask you, we're given to understand that many of your players support option B going ahead to Congress in now 2.5 weeks. As somebody who's been involved in Ulster football all your life and has seen the highs and the lows and also the difficulties of coming through Ulster and winning in All-Ireland, where do you stand on the football structures as they are at the moment? Do you have a strong view on A, B or status quo?
Well, listen, we've been looking backwards as we discussed to this point, really, and I haven't even had a genuine long conversation with any conversation much with Brian or with even the players and stuff. So you might be ahead of me and where players might feel things should go to. The bottom line is, you know, the association always endeavours to do its best by everybody, in my view. And, you know, they're trying to create a situation where everybody's in the race for Sam, and everybody gets good, competitive, meaningful games at their own level and at their own grade. Now, how that's done, I'm not so sure. Ulster Championship of itself is competitive, as we know. The more competitive it is, the better it is for every county in Ulster. So, you know, an Ulster Championship would be hard to give up because it's had such tradition and history, as you say, and it remains a very competitive province, and we possibly were the better of coming out of it this year and all the tight games that we had. So this is a very, very difficult one. It's a very, very important one. I think a lot of thinking going into it over the next couple of weeks. I wouldn't be afraid of change necessarily, because, you know, in the end of the day, you can change and you can always experiment and roll back. I don't know, they didn't get the third year of the Super 8's run. There seems to be less of a feel for it to let it run its trial period. So it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks. I wouldn't have formed any major view on it. I've been looking backwards, but I hope to get to all that somewhere.
Do you have a hunch?
You know, I think you need to be playing at a level that works for your team. And I know from my own club, I know the feeling of being a smaller fish in the pond with my own club here in Tyrone, Stewartstown Harps. I know that when they created the junior, intermediate and senior Ulster clubs and All-Ireland clubs, it was one of the best things that ever happened within the association, because every junior footballer and every junior hurler could finish up playing in Croke Park on an All-Ireland final club day. We managed to go to an All-Ireland club final junior in 2005, and we met a Kerry team who put manners on us again. Fanoog, but ultimately we felt we were the best footballers in Ireland at that stage, even though it was a junior, you know. So I just think it's critical that everybody gets competitive, meaningful games in decent weather, preferably spring, and how that's done, you know, does option B leave the odd mismatch at the end of it all when teams come up into the final edges of it? I need to look at it well. I need to study it. I'd like to talk it out with others and see where all our thoughts rest.
All right, Fergal, great to have you with us this morning. Congratulations on an amazing year. Enjoy watching the video whenever it happens collectively, because there are some incredible highlights, some all-time great moments. Sorry, there was one last thing I wanted to ask you about. Conn Kilpatrick went public on Monday night on the Claire Byrne show on TV. It takes a lot for a young man to go public and speak about the difficulties he's had, but it's a very important topic that he raised when he talked about his addiction to gambling. You guys have obviously known about this over the period of time, and I just did want to offer you the opportunity to pay testimony to his character coming through the way he did, and being somebody who's willing to come forward now and have that conversation publicly.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, this is a very, very serious issue. Whatever about all the football issues that surround us and keep all our thoughts tied up at times, you know, there are real life issues with the public health emergency, gambling, all sorts of addictions out there. Testament to Colin's character is how he did with the Tyrone team this year, because I remember putting him on the last minute in Killarney, which was a sort of a graveyard shift for him, and I'm not so sure, I haven't discussed it with him, he wasn't that overly impressed, but listen, he dug in the football field and he produced a display for the ages in the All-Ireland final. You know, everybody in his own club in Edendork and Tyrone's very proud of Colin, and you know, we did know that he had some battles, and we believed and understand that he's rode them all out, and isn't it great that he was able to stand forward, say his bit, and again with the benefit of others in mind and thoughts for others, because it's a very, very difficult world, and there are lots of traps that young people can fall into, but Colin has stood forward, said his bit. He's an outstanding individual. He's an outstanding footballer, as you see, or as you saw. So listen, let's just hope that helps somewhere out there, some small way out in the real world. Yeah. And we all, his own club has been behind him, and all the county will be behind him. So that's just a difficult time that's hopefully passed in Colin's life.
Fergal, good stuff. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
Thank you.
It's Fergal Logan there, of course. Tyrone managers Fergal Logan and Brian Duher were awarded the AirGrid Manager Moment of the Month Award for September. AirGrid, the state-owned company that's delivering a cleaner energy future for Ireland, has been the official timing partner of the GAA since 2016, and they've this year announced a 5-year extension of their partnership with the GAA as official timing sponsor. This Tyrone team aren't going anywhere anytime soon.
No, definitely not. And clearly they've got excellent management, and they've really structured a charge towards the All-Ireland this year, and it paid off. And even if they didn't win the All-Ireland, you'd be thinking to yourself, God, this team is going to be around for a while. The fact is now that they're going to be totally bolstered confidence-wise heading into next year and the next couple of years. And it's actually kind of hard to know what benefits them with regards to special Congress over the next little while, because of course the Ulster Championship is great, and the strongest voices against any change would be in Ulster. And Tyrone obviously won the All-Ireland after being Ulster champions this year. But as you made the point yesterday, by and large, Ulster can weaken you because it's so strong. So it'll be interesting to see how things go for them were there to be change.
I think, like, to park everything for a moment, right? If you had a Division 1 where the Dubs are challenged week in, week out, where away from home their form hasn't been, we're going to beat you by 5 to 9 points the way it has been in Croke Park sometimes in the league over the years, that actually in Clonus, in Omagh, in Ballybuffet, or in Castlebar or in Killarney, wherever those away games are, and let's say they've got 4 away games for the first year, I think those games are going to challenge Dublin and give the analysts tape on the weaknesses of this Dublin team that we never get to see. Like, you don't know how to challenge Dublin because in the All-Ireland quarterfinals, because you haven't seen them play anybody. Mm. You don't know, like, defender X has a propensity, if you go on his inside, to foul. You don't know that because you haven't seen it. Whereas all of a sudden, that tape emerges. And if I was in charge of any of those teams in Ulster, I'd be like, let's get them and let's get Kerry into situations where they're gasping for breath, and let's see what they're made of.
Let's drag them up to our level of
yes.
competitiveness in the
yes.
most important part of the year. Would definitely be a competitive sort of argument in favour of that, but it doesn't come down to that, as we now know from yesterday's exploits on the show. It is not about the competition whatsoever. It's going to be a financial decision, and hopefully we get clarity on that over the next couple of days. Actually,
that was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.